Good morning. As a business owner, I'll bet that cybersecurity, cyber defense, even cyber insurance are probably not top of mind subjects for you on a day-to-day basis. You're probably more worried about sales and employee retention and business development. Those are all very valid tasks during the course of your day and week. But as you see more things in the news and more possible risk, you may have some interest in wanting to know what to do about cybersecurity. How do you create an environment in your business that protects you and your employees and your company against these kind of risks, but also at the same time doesn't slow down or bog down your company with extra tasks you have to do or extra expenses. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Ways that you can use cybersecurity almost as a profit center, ways to actually make your business make more money even while protecting it against these type of attacks and how damaging these could be. It's extremely underrated how much this can affect the business, and we'll look at some stats about how businesses can fail very quickly after a cyber event. So we'll list out 7 ways you can introduce techniques in your company to protect against a cyber attack or cybersecurity event, help your IT department with cyber defense, and enable employees at all levels of your business to make their job easier while at the same time increasing the defense and security against these events. And we'll go through each one in detail. Now, this presentation is being prepared for a Trade Association of Accountants in North Carolina. So there may be some things that have to do with professional services, but it applies to any business, whether you're a paving company, whether you're a staffing agency, whether you're a car dealership, any type of business. All these same things apply. So you may hear references to accountants, and that's what this is being prepared for, but it does apply to all businesses. So to make it real for your company, let's talk about a tale of two perils. So two different hypothetical things that could happen in your company and how they're different, and one you can relate to, one maybe you can't. So imagine it's a Monday morning, and this is a building. Imagine you're an accounting firm and this is your office, and you pull in to your parking lot at 7:55 a.m. You want to get there a few minutes early. You open up at 8. Everything looks great. You're getting out of your car, you're going to walk into your building, and everything looks fine. But imagine instead of pulling up like this, you pull up and you see there's flames pouring out of the windows. So there's fire ravaging your office. Well, that's going to be an issue, right? And hopefully, God forbid, nobody gets hurt. You know, everybody makes it out okay, or nobody's in the building. But a couple hours later, your building is reduced to a smoldering pile of ashes, or the inside is gutted, and there's nothing left inside. Well, the first question is, after making sure everybody's okay and nobody got hurt, well, how soon can we be back in business, right? Because that's what you are there for. You're there to sell stuff and support employees and have them be able to get income for their families and serve your customers. So, buildings burn down. How fast can you be back in action? How fast can you be back in business? Well, if you're resourceful and this is the scenario, you can go to Walmart and buy some folding tables, go to the office supply store, maybe buy some new PCs, get some phones. There's probably some empty office space somewhere in your area where you could even temporarily get some space that you could cram everybody into. In theory, if you really rushed around, you could be in business with a day or two, right? You could be back operating in a day or two. Your customers probably won't notice too much of a difference. Maybe they had a tough time getting a hold of you for a day. Your employees, maybe, you know, once they realize everything's going to be okay, they're grateful that they still have a job. They're happy to at least be in an office somewhere working. And you're on with your business while you do the more permanent recovery of getting either your old office back or maybe renting some new space. You could be back in business pretty quick. So there's hypothetical peril number one, right? You probably will have some losses. Maybe you have an insurance deductible. Maybe you have some things lost that aren't covered. You might also have business interruption insurance where you have coverage for any losses of revenue that happened for those couple days where people couldn't reach you. Maybe you have coverage for that. Now, what about another scenario? Let's go back to this picture and imagine you're pulling in and everything looks good and the building looks good, but when you walk inside the door, you see this on your computers. Your files are encrypted. The building's fine, everything's structurally sound, but all your computers, when everybody logs in, says your files are encrypted, your data has been deleted. Here's an email address. If you email this link within 12 hours with this ID, you have to pay a ransom to get access to your files. Now imagine everything that's in your computer system. And I'm not just talking about on-site on servers, even stuff in the cloud through maybe you use Amazon for your cloud data, maybe you use Salesforce, maybe you use some other third party. If they've locked up all of your logins, you may not have access to everything. If you're an accountant, you may have customer files. If you are an architect, you may have design files. If you're a sales company, all your sales information is on there. Plus, accounts receivable, that's your lifeblood. That's where you get your money. You may not have access to that. Your customers are trying to buy stuff through your websites. Your websites might all be shut down, right? So how do you deal with that? And how fast could you be back in business, if ever? If you can't have access to your data, your information, you may have a tough time getting back in business. Now, between the two, you probably have coverage and procedures and plans for the fire event. You may not have as robust plans for the cyber attack event. So what we're going to talk about are things you can put in place both to prevent it, just like you have fire extinguishers and sprinkler systems and maybe even best practices to make sure your building doesn't catch on fire. There's things you can do to prevent the cyber attack from happening. How common is this? Well, a high percentage of businesses, 80 something percent, have some type of cyber attack happen to them every week. You may not know about it, but they're pinging businesses all over the place. What happens if it does turn into an actual attack and you lose money? What could happen to your business? Well, according to Inc. Magazine, 60% of businesses fold, close, go out of business within 6 months of a cyber attack. Let that sink in. If you have a cyber event against your business that is significant, you could be out of business within 6 months. More than half of companies do. That's not the same with that fire event. Your building catches on fire, it burns down. You probably are not going to be out of business in 6 months. You're probably going to find a way around that. Most of it's because you have insurance coverage, but also partially because of the damage that it does. How prevalent is this? Well, here is an example of a typical cyber event cost. Now, what we did was we use a claims history calculator from one of the big insurers. This happens to be from Chubb Insurance. You're probably familiar with them. They're a major commercial lines insurance company. It's one of the companies we write business for. And we typed in professional services, accountants, annual revenue of $880,000. That's not a huge accounting firm. That's a relatively small, mid-sized accounting firm. And if you had a cyber event, here's what the cost would be. The total would be over $500,000, $541,000 for a cyber incident. The other factor that goes into calculating this is how many records you have, how many customer files, or how many pieces of information you have. And this automatically calculate it based on an industry average, 1700. The reason that's important will come up a little later in maybe some notifications and third-party losses. But it does break down what these losses would be. You have to do an investigation, you have to do some forensics, you have to do some compliance recovery, fines and penalties. Most states have laws that if your customer's information is released to third parties through some cyber event, you have to notify these parties. You have to pay for different types of credit monitoring or damages and pay fines to the government agencies. And it doesn't matter if you're not in that state. For example, in the state of California, even if you don't have a business in California, if your customers or employees are there, some of this kicks in. You may have to pay a ransomware fine. Look, a ransomware payment to the hackers, that's the smallest thing on the list. How much you pay to the hackers is usually the least amount of damage that you have as a business owner. In fact, you have to be very careful about paying this, and that's why it's good to have a third party, whether it's an incident response team, and we'll talk about that later, or your insurer handle this, because if that hacker is part of some criminal organization or international organization that maybe have ties to terrorism or narcotics trafficking, if you pay them, sometimes you can get into trouble because you're funding illegal activities, right? So that's something we'll get into, how to handle the incident. Where does this happen? Well, it happens throughout all different industries, but what causes it? The actions that cause cyber incidents. See this pinkish red up here? That's physical. I'm sorry, that's social. What that means is somebody in your organization was tricked into allowing access to a hacker. And you may not think that could ever happen, but everybody heard about the big MGM Las Vegas hack that happened a couple months ago in the fall of 2023. And what happened was the hackers got in and locked down all the computers and all the guest access information for the hotels, MGM and some of the other hotels. All the gaming was shut down. And that was done because somebody called up the casino, talked to a upper level management, and convinced them to give access. You may not think you would ever fall for it, but these hackers use very sophisticated social engineering. They get information about these people ahead of time, and we'll talk about how they do that, how you can prevent it, and that's how they get in. The blue part is malware. Same thing. That has to do with allowing bad programming to be installed on your server. So look at those two added together. This one and this one, 26%, 25%. That's 50% of the time it has to do with human error. Either a person allows access verbally or gives them a login, or they allow malicious code to be put on your computer. And we'll talk about how to prevent that as well. The actors that cause this, most of them are external, right? So you can see this orangey box here is external. That means this is not usually an inside job. Most of the time, it's not an inside job. Sometimes inside job is only 15%. The blue is partner, meaning that could be a customer, it could be a vendor, could be a client. That's really outside too. So if you lump all this together, most of the time it's done externally, but enabled by an internal actor. So you can see how that plays together. What type of businesses are affected by this? Well, a lot of times it's professional services, technology, retail, hospitality, going farther down the list. However, we're seeing a lot more hacks in businesses that are traditionally not known to be technical. Paving companies, contractors, storage facilities, and even car dealerships. Because the hackers are finding out that the less technical a business is, the lower threshold for prevention will be in place, and there's still a lot of valuable data there. Many times they use access through your company to get into another company that's maybe your vendor, maybe a customer, and you could have liability. If a hacker gets into your company and uses that access to get into another company, the other company could sue you for allowing that flow through. And we'll talk about prevention of that and also to how to eliminate that liability. So what do you do about it? Well, the good news is cyber attacks and cyber liability and cyber losses is largely preventable. You can actually keep this from happening. Unlike other types of losses like the fire, liability lawsuits, employment type claims, even E&O type claims, those are largely unpreventable. You can lower the risk, you know, employment practices, you have good rules and terms and conditions, and that'll keep that down. Fire, you have best practices. Many times, though, those losses are completely random, and they just happen accidentally. Cyber is almost always preventable. When you go back through and replay the tape of how that cyber event happened, you almost always see where it was preventable. Why is that? Most cyber attacks take more than a month to materialize. How does that happen? The hackers get in to your system and they sit there and they monitor, they collect information for several weeks, sometimes several months before they take action. Why do they do that? Well, because if they can watch your emails, read your messaging, get information about your customers, they can use that then to infiltrate more parts of your network and exfiltrate data. If they just go in like a bull in a china shop and try to grab everything right away, they're not going to be able to do as much damage. So these attacks on average take 75 days. They can be interrupted at any time during that period. So if you find it out before they make their move, you can actually deter it and deflect it. All of the best practices to do that are not IT based. So you have a great IT department, you have a IT person that handles all this. They're really good at their job. However, the types of attacks we're talking about are usually not all IT based. Even though it sounds like cyber should be IT, many times there's a disconnect. Plus, you know, you want your IT person to be focused on business development, sales, getting more customers, making the procedures more easy for your employees to do their daily routines, making it easier for your customers to order stuff, making the workflows more efficient. That's really what the IT people should be doing, and of course making it run smoothly. You don't want them to be the Navy SEALs out there defending your perimeter, because the other part of these attacks is they change from week to week. The hackers come up with new stuff every single week. No IT person in the world is going to be able to know all the latest attacks and prevent them, right? That would be a full-time job just researching it every single day. The other good news is, like we talked about at the beginning, the best practices and procedures to prevent this all improve operations. Like a lot of things that happen with, you know, risk management, sometimes it's a pain in the neck to have to, you know, put guard gates up or maybe have, you know, more friction in the system to prevent against liability. Most of these procedures improve operations and it'll make it, your life easier, and that for your employees. And the other reason you want to do all this is because beyond that money, remember that $541,000, there's many more things that are losses beyond the money. And sometimes these actually are worse than the money. These are the reasons why 60% of these companies go out of business after an attack. It's not always the money, it's these other things. First of all, you have morale. If your company is shut down for a few days or a few weeks, your employees are starting to get antsy. They're going to worry, do I have a job? Can I count on my leaders, my managers, my owners to protect this company and protect me from these types of attacks? If this happened, who knows? Is my job at risk? Is my income at risk? So the morale is going to be a big deal. You're also going to lose that attention of that team building, morale building, right? For that week, none of that's going to happen. You're going to have to start over when you get back in business. You're also going to lose client confidence. If your customers can't get a hold of you, they can't buy stuff. If they see that you're scrambling around trying to put out fires, no pun intended, they're not going to have a lot of confidence in doing business with you. As you know, converting customers, closing deals is hard enough as it is when everything is going right. If you're trying to scramble to get your business off its back and back on its feet, you are not going to be able to serve customers well, if at all. They may not be able to order if your computer system is down. That client confidence is going to give your competitors opportunities to poach your customers. They're going to say, hey, yeah, XYZ company, look what happened to them. They can't even take care of their own computers. How are they going to take care of you? Come on over here. And that could also happen with employees. Good employees could get poached as well once your competitors hear about it. You're also going to have some risk of vendor contracts. If your vendors aren't able to sell to you for a week or 2 weeks because you're out of business, they may look at it like, you know, we need this income for our own survival. if we can't count on them as a customer, maybe our terms and conditions aren't going to be as good. You know, we gave them some really good terms. We gave them a priority status with delivery of product, and maybe we have to rethink that if they're going to be at this risk. Maybe we have to worry about the hacker getting in through them into our computer, so maybe we should lock them out, right? In addition, you may have third-party claims. If the hackers get in through your system and get into a vendor's computer system or get your customer's data, you may have liability. Those third parties can maybe come after you for damages and make you pay for any losses they have. And there may be liability. In some states, that's the law, which brings up the last one is regulatory scrutiny. When this happens and you have personal information or customer information that's revealed to third parties, or even sensitive corporate information, there's a lot of regulatory agencies at the state level and at the federal level that may be coming in to say, hey, what's going on? And you might have some fines, you might have some increased scrutiny over the years because of this one event, and you want to avoid all that. So here are the 7 things you can do to prevent it. We'll talk about it more in detail. Before you get scared that these are going to be a big deal, these are hardly any work at all. We're going to look at each one and show how easy it is to do and how it can improve the rest of your business, not just prevent the fraud or prevent the hack, how it can improve business day to day, even without preventing the hack. The key to this is hardly any work at all. These are very easy. Most of the time you have to do it just one time, or it's automated, or it's something that will improve the day-to-day operations of your staff. And the purpose of each of these, as you can see from the little cheesy stock photo, is that it ends the domino effect. When all these events start happening that could damage your business or cause harm or cause losses, it puts a block in it so none of that happens. All these dominoes to the right are all protected because all the chaos here doesn't get any farther than it could. Use the same metaphor at the beginning. It's a firewall, right? It protects the sensitive, valuable parts of your company from the damage that's happening outside. All right, so we'll dive right in. Here's the first method of preventing a cyber attack to damaging your company. It's having a device inventory. So on the left, in this blue box, you see a picture of a computer. You have those in your company. Laptops, desktops, you have servers, you have things like routers and Wi-Fi devices. All those you probably know about. Any one of those is a way that a hacker can get into your company. However, within your organization, you probably have hundreds, if not thousands, of other devices that are connected to your network that can be used as a port of entry for hackers. You have security cameras or surveillance cameras. You have phones. Most phone systems actually go through your server. Little side note, when you delete a voicemail from your system, if you have extension 105 and you're Joe Smith and you hear a voicemail and you press 2 to delete it, it doesn't actually get deleted. It's still a sound file on your computer somewhere that could be recovered later. So be aware of that anytime you're wondering about if this information is private. You also have smart TVs. Those are all connected to your network. You may have security gates and guard entry gates. Those are all IP devices. Thermostats, a lot of times, are connected to your network for automatic climate control. Even the little portable tablet devices you may use for your customers, for warehousing, for inventory, are all IP devices. They're all ways to get in. In fact, this picture of the security camera, this is a way that we had a client that was a car dealership, had a hack come into their company. The hackers infiltrated the security camera, which wasn't password protected, had no security on it. And they were able to use that access to get into a larger scale network in the company. They monitored that for a few days and they found out that there was a connection through that to the main server. They got into the main server, started monitoring emails. They got the names of some executives. They watched email communications for a couple weeks of how the executives talked to each other. And then they slid into one of these email chains from one executive to another and pretended they were executive number one. And they said to the other one, hey, by the way, this client needs access to our computers because they're going to be uploading a bunch of orders, and they have a new wire transfer account for their payments. So he was able to, this hacker was able to get the other executive to believe it was Executive A and allowed them to enable access for the hacker because they had monitored the email communications for so long to know how these people talk to each other. So what you start with is a device inventory. This can be automated. Most servers and most Wi-Fi networks or computer networks have a way to list out any devices that are connected to it. And if you, your IT person can do this, give you that list of all the devices. And once you have it, now you can see which ones have controls, how they access other networks. And look, your surveillance camera system probably doesn't need to access your banking. It probably doesn't need to access your customer data. You can separate that out so that it doesn't connect to other things. In the same way, your guard gate doesn't need to access your customer files, right? So do this device inventory. It's an easy thing. You can do it one time. It's automated. Plus, it will keep even accidental damage from conflicting with other things. We saw an event where, see this tablet in the lower left-hand corner? There was a tablet used for inventorying warehouse movement. So when a truck came in with inventory, there was a loading dock person who would type it into the tablet, scan it, and would go into inventory. Well, what happened was because it was connected to another network, every time that happened, it slowed down the other network because there was a lot of activity in the warehouse. And it slowed down customers being able to order from the sales side. So just by disconnecting those two, it made the sales side run faster. They saw a 4% increase in sales because people didn't have to wait to place their order. So these things can assist with other parts of the business. And it's a one-time thing. What's number two? Number two is similar, a credential census, right? You have employees, vendors, customers that all have different types of access to your network and to your files. You want to know who is allowed to get in. Make a census of all the people that are able to get into anything, even if it's, you know, just a, you know, a janitor that can access the doors to get in at night. You want to know everybody has access, and do the four W's: who, what, where, why. So who is it? What can they access? Where can they access, and why do they need that access? And you can ask some questions like, and this is Sames, it's a typo, it should be sales manager. Does the sales manager need website developer access? Do they just need customer access? Does the CEO need ... Do they need access to everything? Because credential authority does not equal job authority. Just because somebody has a higher authority with their job doesn't mean that they need to have higher authority with credentials, right? Just because you're the CEO doesn't necessarily mean you should be able to change the website. If you don't need to, don't give access to the CEO. It's not to keep the CEO from having the authority. It's to keep a hacker from using the CEO's access to damage something else. So the limited amount of information, better. Now, if a CEO needs to get into that on a temporary basis, then you can enable it and then shut it off. Right. Another example, does the bookkeeper need access to customer files? Maybe, maybe not, depending on what they're doing for bookkeeping. But if they don't need it, don't enable it because it has nothing to do with their authority. You're not insulting them. It just keeps your business from having, you know, further damages. Also look at third-party APIs. You may have enabled some third-party vendors or customers to have access to things using APIs so that it makes the connection easier. Make sure that the credentials on those APIs are known. And also for clients, clients can enter data into their sales system. They can put in their name, they can put an address, they can put in whatever. But some systems also have a notes box where they can type in notes for their order. Be very careful that notes box can't be used to enter computer code. Sometimes if you can enter certain types of code, it will enable them to get access to your system. Why is this one easy? Because you can include this with employee records. So employees are constantly updating their records, their direct deposit, their name and address, maybe their tax information, maybe their 401k or whatever other types of daily or weekly activity they have. Maybe their time clock, their hours. You can include a field for what accesses they have. And anytime one of them is changed, it goes into their field. So if you have an employee that maybe gets separated or is on leave or is away for a while or maybe traveling overseas, you can look at their access to say, maybe while they're traveling to Europe, we disable their access in case they go to a Wi-Fi cafe and somebody steals their information, right? So you can use the knowledge of doing this to protect your network only if you have the knowledge in the first place. All right, the third way to prevent for a hack to happen is what's called active monitoring. Remember what we talked about. These hackers will lurk on your system for weeks or months before they do an attack. Remember the one we talked about where they came in through the security camera, they monitor the emails between the executives? That's what they do. They will watch the messaging, the emails that go back and forth between multiple people to see what the true intelligence of that business is. And they'll use that information, that intel, to craft messages either to customers on the outside, vendors on the outside, maybe your bank, maybe other executives, maybe employees. Maybe they know that the CEO, something small, you know, has a dog, and maybe their IT person has the same kind of dog, and they talk about it by email. Hey, how's Rover, right? Hey, is your dog Spot okay? I know he had a, you know, upset stomach, whatever. Well, now on a Friday afternoon, when everybody's gone or about to leave, the hacker can do a fake message to the IT person. Hey, how's Rover doing? By the way, can you do me a favor? Can you give me a new login because I lost my login to the server? And they'll email them the login, and now the hacker can get in. Something as simple as that. It's that combination of malware and social engineering. They gather the information and records to use at a later date. You can detect this if you actively monitor your system. You will see that this is going on. It's passive, but it's visible. They're not taking any action, but they're there and they can be observed if you know where to look. There are a couple ways to do this monitoring. Your IT person certainly can do it, but the best method is using a third party, because a third party is going to know all the new methods that are out there that come up every week. Every week, the hackers come up with new ways of doing this. And unless you're out there constantly getting updates on this, you're not going to know. How do the third parties know? Well, most of them are insurance companies, and they know what claims they're getting. So when they get a claim for a cyber attack, they see how it was done. They do forensics and deconstruct the method, and then they can tell all their systems, this is what to look for. Many insurance policies for cyber liability insurance, as part of the policy, will put active monitoring on your system and look out for it. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to lift a finger. It'll automatically do it. The other thing you want to look for is large volumes of records going out. It's called customer information exfiltration. They will be extracting and downloading all your files and all your computers to their local server. Why do they do that? Because when they lock up the server, remember that first screen we saw where you walked into the office and it said, your computers are locked down. They're not really locked down, they're deleted. So even if you say, well, I have my crack IT team, my expert IT person restore the computer or get past this, there's nothing to restore. They've deleted everything, even the backups they've deleted. They've put it on their system, so when you pay them, they just reinstall it, right? So you can also detect that information going out. At any given time, there's some information going out. You know, one customer file, somebody emails something. But you can detect if there's these big streams of information going out. A lot of times they do it on weekends or overnight when no one's watching. But if you have active monitoring, that will happen. That will help prevent the lockdown of all your devices and losing the customer data in the first place. So no matter how you do it, whether it's done in-house, third-party, insurance-related, or other method, you want to have active monitoring. It's passive. Why it's easy? Because you don't have to do anything. You install it once, and it happens automatically. Number four thing you can do to prevent a cyber attack is to support your IT department. Now, when you see this headline that says IT department support, it's not getting support from the IT department. It's supporting them. Support for them, not from them. as an executive, maybe you're on the board, maybe you're an executive manager, vice president, CEO, you want to enable and support the IT department, not putting another demand on them. Their job is tough. They're probably not sitting around twiddling their thumbs during the day. They probably have a full-time job. So if you go to them and say, hey, we need to do more cybersecurity, they're going to groan. First of all, they're going to think they're doing enough as is. Second of all, they don't want more work because, not because they're lazy, their day is full. An external support of them will have a wider knowledge of emerging threats. Just like we talked about, the IT department, no matter how great they are, no matter how expert they are, they're not going to know the new hack that was invented last week by the hackers. By supporting them, you can enable and support them to continue focusing on business development, sales, CRM, and not get bogged down with just defending against the hordes that are trying to get through your defenses. You want it to focus on sales, marketing, more business, not on tedious risk management. So get them that support. It's also cheaper if you get outside third-party support, because the organization, company, or source for that can be distributed over hundreds of companies. The outside monitoring, outside support is not just working on your company, but they can do probably 100 companies with the same amount of work. If you task that same job to your IT person, that would almost be a full-time job for them. This way you can support it. It enables more production and it helps the IT person take a load off their back. Even if you pay for it directly through an outside company, it'll be cheaper. Most of the time you can get it for free from an insurance company who wants to prevent claims. What's number five? Well, number five is one of the most important ones. It is social engineering memos. Look, this is something you're going to distribute to your employees. You don't want to be like the Office Space guy with the TPS report, right? Where things, people roll their eyes and say, look, one more thing I have to do. This can be an asynchronous reminder. What does that mean? It's not something they have to fill in, right? The infamous TPS report they have to fill in and turn in. This is just an outgoing, outbound reminder to employees to be aware of weird phone calls. If somebody calls you and says, change my password, think about it. If somebody asks for what their login is, think about it. Be careful when you're using an outside network or VPN. Be careful when you are using your personal device to log into your company email, right? Be skeptical of weird phone calls that ask for certain things. Verify email headers to make sure it's coming from the right person. There's a dozen things that employees can do that will eliminate 90% of hacks. Remember, here's how the actions happen. 50% of it is from social engineering or malware. And that comes from an action an employee took. If this 51% of the time, the employee knew not to take that action, that would all be eliminated, right? And even some of the physical would be eliminated because the employee prevented it in the first place. So how do you implement this? All you need to do is take something you already have, maybe a weekly newsletter or weekly employee message, or maybe even just print it and put it in their payroll envelope. It could be one sentence. Every week you have one thing. Hey, make sure you use two-factor authentication. Make sure you don't fall for any phone calls. Also, you're deputizing them to be part of the solution. Everybody loves the whole idea of cybersecurity, hacking, investigations. People love that subject and they like to be part of it. People also love to do suggestions. I'm sure you get all kinds of suggestions from your staff. Hey, you should do this. Hey, we should try this idea out. Everybody has suggestions. A lot of times there are things you may have thought of, but you can't do because of other practical reasons that the employee may not have thought of. Many times the suggestion might be doable, but just not high on the list. Here's a way that employees can be solicited for suggestions. If you see something, say something. And if you do it every week, you're not overwhelming them, and you're also not requiring them to take action. You're just reminding them of something. by doing it on a regular basis, it'll stay front of mind. Maybe if you have 10 things you remind them of, every few months, they're going to get that same thing again. And it might be the difference between somebody at MGM when they answer the phone from somebody saying, "Hey, give me the login," them saying no versus saying yes. So you can put memos to your employees, mix it in with other regular messages, right? So they don't feel overwhelmed with a new thing. It's part of regular communications. Number six is updates and patches. Look, on the left, we've all seen these messages: software update, update software, update your new version, right? Everybody sees that. Nobody hardly ever does it. You click the later button, you click the decline button, you click the cancel button. Because when you went to that piece of software, you used it for some task you're doing right then. And see this green bar at the bottom? This is what you don't want to see. You don't want to click update now and then have to wait for that green bar for 5 minutes, because that's going to slow you down doing your job. But the software update does need to get done. Most employees don't click decline or later because they just don't want to do it. They just don't want to do it right now. So how to make it easy? You have a paid update social event, maybe once a month, maybe once a week. You probably already have some social event. Maybe you have a Friday paid lunch for the employees. Maybe you have bring your dog to work day, right? You have something that you do already that's kind of a social event, because these software updates aren't going to require a lot of time and attention from the employee. They can click a button and then just leave it go for 15, 20 minutes. So by making this a fun paid event, it's going to cost you a little bit of money, because you're gonna have to pay for time that's not really productive. But if you do it once a week, once a month, all of your patches will be updated. A vast majority of cyber attacks happen because of unpatched, unupdated software. The software companies, they learn about these hacks, they learn about the vulnerabilities on a regular basis, and that's what they put in the updates. All of these updates are usually to prevent vulnerability, to eliminate risk for the software. So if you don't update it, you're not protected against the most current version of hackers' methods. You're not going to be able to count on all employees every single time clicking the update button. So if you make it a singular event where everybody does it, you have some food, bring your dog to work, every 15, 20 minutes you have to go back to your computer and click yes, what's the big deal, right? And it's also a way that you can get a second benefit from it, from employee morale, paid for really not having to do a lot of work. Don't try to mix it in with other work tasks, because it's going to defeat the purpose. Make it a fun thing. They got to go click yes a few times, and people will feel good about the fact that you're caring about getting this done, but not in a way that overburdens the employee. Last, reason number seven is having a response team, or at least a response idea. You don't just want it to be IT. Think about that first event that happened at the beginning of this webinar. You walk into your building and all your computers are locked down, right? If you are a CEO or a manager and you don't have a plan, you're going to look like you're running around with your chicken with your head cut off. Your customers are going to see it, your employees are going to see it, everybody's going to see it. You don't want to be in that place. You want to have a plan, like you knew this was happening. Okay, here's what you do. You do this, you do that, you do this, right? IT will definitely be involved with that, but you also want to include sales. Get a hold of the customers. Let them know, "Hey, we're going to be offline here for a couple hours. You can just call in. We're going to be offline here for a little while. You can email in," right? Give them some comfort. Give them some confidence. Don't let them think the worst on their own. You also want to get bookkeeping involved, accounts receivable, banking. Making sure your bank accounts are locked down. You want to contact legal, either in-house counsel or your law firm, to find out, "Hey, if we have this problem, what do we do for regulatory requirements? Do we have to notify anybody? Do our lenders have any risk?" Right? Your vendors who are shipping stuff, maybe you want to hold off on shipments for 48 hours because your warehouse is shut down. Have a response team. Just like you have fire drills and you have, like, here's what you do if this happens, same thing. HR. You want to have your HR department creating confidence with your personnel, giving them instructions. You also want to include third parties in this. Maybe your landlord, maybe You might have a business association you're a member of that has resources. Because here's the thing, there's no 911 for cyber attacks. If your building's on fire, you call 911. If there's an earthquake, you call 911. If a car crashes into your building, you call 911. If somebody, you know, burglarizes your store, you call 911. There is no 911 response team for a cyber attack, except if you have hired one of these third parties or you have an insurance policy. If you have a cyber insurance policy, that company will likely have a dedicated response team for a cyber attack. Even if they have that, you still want to have an internal procedure of what to do, because if you don't, you're just going to look unorganized. And it'll give the hackers more time to do more damage. If you have a response for it, you can a lot of times nip it in the bud before it gets big. This is crucial. That response will also likely be the difference between if you're one of the businesses that goes out, that closes in 2 years or stays open 60% of the time because they didn't have a plan of what to do in that scenario. Imagine, you know, another metaphor is airline pilots. If the engine goes out, you have a checklist. Okay, do this, try to restart, best practices. If they didn't know what to do and they started trying to figure it out while the airplane is diving to the ground, you're probably going to crash. And you want to be in the same place of preparation as a company. Okay, what else can you do? Well, first is you want to keep up with the daily state of affairs for cyber attack events. Look, this is all relatively new. Cyber attacks really haven't been hitting businesses for much more than, you know, 5-6 years. Sure, there were some before that, but the big ones didn't happen until more recently. And as an example, look, here is just in the last, this week, November 6th, November 3rd, November 10th, November 9th, within 1 week, 4 important articles. Meet your new cybersecurity auditor, your insurer. It talks about how your insurance company is probably the best source of cyber defense, not your IT department. 2003 cyber year in review. It tells you what all the hacks were. There's only one way to solve the cybersecurity skills gap. Your IT person, as good as they are, probably is not up to date on cybersecurity because there's no way you can be. Because cybersecurity is more about defense than it is IT stuff. And how to prepare against an unprecedented cyber incident that may not be insurable. This is just 4 articles. If you read these, you will probably have the awareness you need to as a board member, as a CEO, that will help defeat some of these. Also, compare a cyber rider versus standalone cyber insurance. Most liability policies, whether it's a BOP, a business owner's policy, or a CPP, commercial package policy, or E&O insurance, has some type of rider that is covering cyber events. However, those riders are way different than a standalone cyber policy. Most of them have a limit of 30, 40,000, maybe 50,000, and they exclude tons of things. They're not designed to really protect against cyber insurance claims. It's designed to throw you a bone if you have a big case. Remember, the average claim is $541,000. If you have a $50,000 rider on your regular policy, that's not going to help you much. So look at the two. It may not be worth spending the money for a standalone cyber insurance policy, but just don't overlook it. If you hear the word cyber attached to your policy, you might think, I already have this. But look at what it covers compared to a standalone policy. This third-party monitoring we talked about. Even if you don't have cyber insurance, there's some third-party monitoring companies out there that are very good at doing active monitoring, active surveillance of your system. Penetration test is important. The third-party monitoring company or even other cybersecurity companies can do tests of your system to see if there's vulnerabilities. They can ping your security cameras to see if they can get in through that. They can do social engineering trials by calling up and seeing if they get people to give out passwords. You should also have a funds transfer test transaction policy. What does that mean? If you're a company, anybody in your company who has the authority to transfer funds out, not by check, but electronically, ACH or wire transfer, they should have a policy in place that every single time that money is transferred that's more than a certain amount, maybe $1,000. If it's more than $1,000, here's what you do. First, send $1. wire transfer ACH, then call that recipient using the contact information you know is good. Their Google website, phone number, the phone number from the business card. Don't get it from an email, because a lot of times the hackers will send a fake email telling your accounting department to transfer $82,000 to this new bank account, and they'll even have a fake phone number. If you call the phone number, they'll answer the phone with the name of that vendor. So use a good phone number. Even if you know that it's the right one, if it's more than $1,000, do a test transfer of a dollar, call up the recipient. Did you get the dollar? Yes. Okay, good. Bye. And then wire transfer the other $81,999 every single time. That'll keep you from losing money. Is it an extra 5 minutes? Absolutely. But if you put that policy in place, it'll keep you from having that thing ever happen to you. Just like you have two signers on checks, you may want to have two logins for global sensitive information. Anytime somebody goes into your main server, maybe you want to have two logins at the same time. Anytime somebody logs into your banking system, maybe you want to have two logins. Two people, not two-factor authentication, but two logins. Because what could do more damage? Somebody writing a bogus check for $50,000 or somebody destroying your server? So you might want to have two logins for that. When you're talking to third parties, vendors, customers that you're doing a contract with, start to ask if they have cyber insurance that covers third parties. Most cyber liability insurance policies that are standalone, not riders, have coverage for third parties. So if somebody does damage to you because they came in through another third party, you get covered. And vice versa. If you have good insurance coverage, if somebody comes in through your network, gets into your vendor, destroys their system, they have coverage on your policy. So ask vendors in that sales process, when they're trying to sell you something, hey, do you have cyber insurance? Will it cover us? If we sign up with you and do business with you, if a hacker gets into your computer and then infiltrates us, do you have insurance for that? And it's pretty cheap. So if you ask during the sales process, if they don't have it, maybe they can add it if they want your business. So last but not least, how do we know all this? Look, we don't like to brag about what we do. A lot of times when you go to a webinar, they'll tell you in advance, we're this license, we have this credential, we've done it for so long. We save it for the end. And the reason why is because the only reason this information is important is because of the content of this. The reason we know all these things is because we are a licensed private investigator. We're a certified cybersecurity agent. We're a licensed commercial insurance producer. We're a certified expert witness for forensics. We're a member of many trade organizations. One of the most prominent ones is the ACFE, Certified Fraud Examiners. We're a licensed surety bond agent. We're a certified civil mediator. Here's all the credentials and contracts and all the licenses. Why is this important? It's important because this is how we see these things. This is how we're able to be aware of all these different types of risk, because we see them after the fact. Licensed private investigator, we see it when a company comes to us and says, we've been hacked, help us figure it out. Licensed commercial insurance producer, we see it when a company says, hey, we've been hacked, what's our coverage? And we see the whole event take place. A certified expert witness for forensics, we see it when a plaintiff or defendant in court needs testimony to support their claim against another person. Mediation, same thing. If you have a lawsuit against another party, sometimes these lawsuits are because of damages that were done through a cyber attack. We see both sides of it. We even hold some patents. You see this USPTO. We hold some patents in some security and automation type processes. So we don't say this as a brag, although we do like to brag. We say it because this is a vision or a demonstration of how we know these things and why we see them. It becomes from a very unique combination of knowledge and different industries that come together to see it from all sides. We see these hacks destroy businesses. Even if you recover from it, it could be months, and during that period of time you're not growing your business, you're trying to hold on to employees and customers, and it can be terrible. So anything you can do to prevent it, sure, you can buy insurance, and we recommend you do that as an insurance agent would, but all the other things you do are vastly important to keep it from happening in the first place. For contact information, here's some of our websites that we operate. Direct phone line to our investigative agency, my email address. We'll open up the webinar now for questions. If anybody has any questions, put them in the chat function, and we'll answer those one-on-one. If you're seeing this as a recorded version of it, feel free to email with any questions. Visit the websites for much more information on all of these things, especially riskcoverage.com. That's our cyber insurance agency. We write coverage for all size businesses in cyber, and we can get your free quote and even do a free evaluation of your network to see what vulnerabilities might exist. Doesn't cost you a dime, no obligation. We're glad to help with this because we know how much it can affect a business. If you have other questions, feel free to reach out anytime. We do want to help you. We do want to answer questions and give you the knowledge you need to prevent this from happening to your business that could be catastrophic for you and your employees and your customers.